When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 5, 7 Minutes of Terror. Aaron, was this 1 hour and 1 minute of terror for you? I feel like you probably didn't sleep the night after you watched this because this is your nightmare episode, right?
Is my nightmare episode?
I mean, it was pretty Danny focused.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I like this more than you might suspect.
Okay.
Even though I'm starting to learn to stop, or I'm starting to stop worrying. God damn it, and learn to love the Danny. I was trying to make a love joy. Well, Jesus, strange love. I can't get out of my own way today. I was trying to make a joke. You know what? No more jokes. This episode is great. I liked it. I thought it was an interesting kind of like inversion of the Danielle versus Ed. You know, like Danielle's the one that's overly cautious and, you know, Ed's the risk, the maverick risk taker. And the twist where Danielle has to catch up and gang tackle this, gang tackle of one, this Russian on the landing platform as the world watches and assumes that this is some kind of ceremony they've worked out in comedy was comedy. That was great. There's a lot of things I'm not sure about. Like, I don't know about Kelly falling madly in love with this handsome Russian man. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the Danny serial killer plot line that they're going to be the first serial killer on Mars. Yeah. But I like the resolution. I like the tense standoff over the Martian orbit. I like the slowly ratcheting pressure cooker underneath Margo.
Yes, I really like the lead of this episode. Digging,
I really like
at something she knows is wrong and weird,
which is kind of an interesting Margo Van Braun kind of situation where she's having she unwittingly is like exposing her mentor, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas Margo kind of did it, you know, with eyes wide open. Yeah, I thought this episode is pretty good on balance. It's the last episode was incredible, so this felt like a notch down. But honestly, I thought the last minute or two made up for it, and I really enjoyed it. What about you?
Oh yeah, I really like this episode. You know, I'm glad you're coming around on the Danny stuff because I think it's about to come to a head with Ed. Danny is getting both way too comfortable, like pushing the boundaries there. He's playing with fire, and also Ed has really provoked him, I think, this episode unknowingly by calling the mission off. So I expect fireworks in the next couple of episodes between them, but we'll see. They have a lot to focus on, you know, being the first people on Mars, or no, I guess being the second people on Mars. But we'll see how that goes. I really like the stuff with Karen and Wayne. Their conversation, it's both a funny scene and then this heartfelt scene of like soul searching with Karen not knowing exactly what she wants to do, and Wayne kind of coaching her through that with the example of Margo, which I thought was a little weird to just kind of not have Margo in this episode.
But oh, you're talking about Molly. You're talking about Molly.
Or yes, sorry, Molly. God. Yeah, to not actually have her in this episode would be talking about her felt a little strange because we haven't seen her since she got kicked out of NASA.
The premiere. Or was that the second episode? Yeah, I wonder if she, because of the way they went the season, they tried to save a little bit of money by making her not a featured, you know, or like main cast member. And I don't know exactly the rules, but I know there's certain rules to, like, if you pay this much and you give them this credit, then you get them for this many episodes. And it could be that they need her for later on, or it could be that she was just guest starring for two episodes and then we won't ever see her again because she's out of NASA.
Yeah.
And she is retired. Like, sounds like she's just retired. Maybe this is the last one. Mm-hmm. You know, Molly's painting and she's happy. She's living her best life. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, but that might be what they're doing.
Yeah, we'll see. But she did. It did feel. I felt her absence this episode.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm and I really liked seeing Ed take the ship back over and get on the mic, get on the video phone, and deliver a message to Dev. That was fun because, you know, we knew he was kind of a shit. He revealed that last episode. And now Ed, the principled, you know, NASA man, has got something to say about it. That was fun.
And dishonored so this ship and crew.
The country, yourself, everybody you work with. Yeah. And and seeing Karen stick it to him. Yeah, it was all very good. Very good.
I wonder if there's any other shoes to drop there.
I mean, yeah, there's got to be. They're, you know, they may not have gotten to Mars first, but they're still there. They're still like interfacing probably with the crews of the Russian and the American space associations. So we'll see. There was one thing that surprised me in this episode more than anything else, and that was the fact that both the Russian and American spacecraft seemed to be fine after the collision from last episode. Basically fine. You know, you have this one engine. It's like kind of malfunctioning, sorta, but they were able to limp along on their other engines, and that engine wasn't even like totally broken. It was just like a little problem with it. They fixed with the help of the Russians. I don't know. I guess I expected more. My question, I suppose, because I didn't see it out there, is did they get out there with a pressure washer and like wash steamrolled blood stain off the hull?
Well, it turns out the spacesuits are highly absorbent. They're made out of quilted bounty, and not much of that actually leaked out.
Yeah, they're wearing ShamWow suits under there. Yeah,
I was a bit taken aback that there wasn't more obvious damage, and that they were able to. Yeah, it sounds like but I guess it hit the top of the thing, so you don't have to worry about their heat tiles being jarred loose or whatnot. I thought my prediction was Helios mission was going to have to turn around and come get all of them, and you're going to have this one giant joint dysfunctional family mission,
right?
So I was surprised by that, but also I can't, like, it seemed like it was a catastrophic from a life standpoint, but they didn't sell it like this big collision, you know?
It's relatively low speed when you're talking about space speeds.
It's hundreds of tons going against hundreds of tons. And when you've got a 150 pound woman between it, that's unfortunate, but to these spaceships frames, maybe it's not so big a deal.
Yeah, I suppose not. I was expecting more from that. But it wasn't a big problem. And I didn't have any major problems with the episode. I really enjoyed it.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
No lunch this week, as I'll be traveling on vacation. But get ready for next week when we have the rare, elusive, dare I say premium lunch with Talitha and Aaron.
And while you're waiting for the return of the king, don't forget, May is the time to switch your Patreon tiers to make sure you maintain your full benefits by June. Stop by support.baldmove.com to check your Patreon levels to see the new benefits and decide which one is right for you.
And finally, tickets are now on sale for Badass Fest 6. Come meet us live and in person, watch a mystery badass film with us, and then hear us record the podcast right there in front of you in a theater packed with Bald Move fans. Get your details and your tickets at baldmove.com/live.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com right now to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. What do you say we get into the recap?
I would love to do that.
All right, we start off with a space funeral for the Russian and American astronauts who died in last episode's collision. I really love this shot that they leave it on with the covered bodies leaving the ship, spinning off into space in this very... I don't know, when this show does do 2001-esque moments like this, they really capture the beauty of it. And this was a beautiful shot.
Yeah, it's always strikes me when I see what I would consider like these more realistic depictions of burial in space. They do this on Expanse from time to time too. It always strikes me how similar it is to a burial at sea. You know, sure. Like, yeah, they used to sew you up in your hammocks, put two round shot at your feet and slide you off. And it's very much like these guys are wrapped up in their, I don't know if they're actual body bags or these are just sleeping bags or what. And they're tied in a bundle and they're shot off into space and they'll be there forever.
Yeah, they'll be traveling out there forever. She just sent them to another star, maybe. Yeah, probably not enough.
Yeah,
the Delta V to break free of the gravitational pull.
Yeah, but you could track this as a body and probably go recover it in a few hundred years, and they'll be mostly similarly to they are there now. I mean, to the extent that the sunlight degrades their, if those bags stay intact, yeah, they'll be a fresh frozen human forever. It's wild to think about that. That's totally, this is like I said, you know, the sea contains untold dead of mariners and people over, but like those remains eventually get reclaimed. Not so in space. Like, it's kind of wild to think in hundreds of years of space travel and flight, there would be thousands and thousands of corpses orbiting space. But that's probably the future we're heading for. I don't know. I always thought that always gives me a little chills when I think about it.
They always talk about that space debris, right? But they don't tell you what it's made up of. And it's a lot of that is corpses. Yeah.
Soil and debris
is made of people.
I also, a great choice. Like Mazzie Star, if you ever want to turn the feelings up in a room, throw her on Rhymes of the Hour or An Hour is good. It's good, good moody music to play over that space funeral.
Ellen gives a speech and the Russians come to Houston to work on the Mars mission with NASA. And Margo meets the director, Lenara Putish.
I thought it was Kotish.
It might be. I didn't get her name.
We don't get. We still don't have. Still don't have subtitles on the screeners.
Yeah. She wants to go over some off the record cooperation that they need, namely that they want to use NASA's gear on Mars for their mission objectives, which they won't actually say what those objectives are. And Margo decides to play some hardball here. She says, I'll grant your request if within 2 weeks you bring Sergey to Houston.
This director Kotish. You know, I don't I don't believe that you should hit a weaker person than you in anything other than self-defense. But if I was Margo, I'd be thinking she has a pretty punchable face. And her whole affect, like, it's the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just rolling in there and be like, it's like the dude from Office Space. Yeah, I'm going to need your satellites and your equipment. And yeah, I'm going to need you to give me some budget. So it's like, God, it's infuriating. But this is why you don't give in to blackmail, kids.
Right. We need an official Bald Move rule for this. Because I've seen this in so many shows. You give into blackmail, it never ends. It never ends. Why would it?
I was assured that the last time you blackmailed me over the thing that cannot be revealed to anyone ever, it was the last time that you would blackmail me over that thing. Like, and
right?
They give it like a little hopeful note, but I don't know. I guess I'll have to see how they tell the story. But I don't think they're telling a story where this ends well for Margo or Sergey.
It can't. I mean,
like,
let alone the Russians, the American government. If she goes to the DOJ with this information,
yeah.
and they find out that it's her that gave the Russians the designs for their engines, she's in huge trouble.
At the minimum, she will never work at NASA again. She will have all of her security clearances stripped, and she
will resign in disgrace. They're not going to pull strings for her to bring her Russian boyfriend over to the U.S. and his family. It's not going to happen.
Well, they might do that, because that could be a huge coup for them, you know, to do that. And if they can get, they feel they can get away with it, they might. But no fucking way. Like, if the cost will be her entire life up to this point.
I mean,
and that's if she's not doing hard time at Leavenworth, you know?
Right. I think the natural conclusion to this, or the natural next step, is for her to go to the DOJ and they say, all right, you're our double agent. You're going to feed us information from the Russians and we're going to give them false information, or at least like unimportant information.
That's dangerous game to play when you're doing a joint mission with the Russians on Mars, too, because do the Russians outnumber the Americans now?
Not once Dev gets there, certainly, but
okay.
But like, I think it's pretty close on the actual Sojourner.
Yeah, I do too. Because I keep on thinking, you know, ever since the Jolly Roger played, I keep on thinking like space piracy. There's going to be some space piracy. There's going to be some space mutiny here, and they threatened it. Like, these Russians are kind of mutinous.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're wanting their hands on the lever, and you know, there's good reasons for a lot of this. Hands on the lever, they're wanting to rush out and claim glory for their country. They want to risk their lives rather than let these capitalist dogs win. There's a lot of signs and the pointing to this is going to be a very, very tricky situation, and Margo's going to have to enable it for a good long while. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think she's going to do? She goes to the DOJ and just comes clean? Or do you think she's going to try to Margo this situation and manage everything and try to do a revolving disclosure? And
maybe she throws Bill under the bus. Maybe it's like, well, Bill left around that time. I don't know what information he was giving him.
All I know, we haven't had any leaks since Peanut left this control room.
We'll see.
Gosh. And what's Elaida going to think, man?
Her mentor is a Russian spy.
She sacrificed all this personal gain and personal benefit to work for NASA because of the principle of the thing. And I will say that this Kotish and the position they put Margo in almost single-handedly swung me back on the team Margo. Like, I'm kind of like, yeah, just fuck that smug Soviet, you know.
Gotcha. And seeing how, you know, poorly Sergey was treated, because I don't hate Sergey either. He's in a tough spot, like Margo says.
Yeah, I mean, you can say there's good and bad things about the Soviet Union, like there's good and bad things about America. But like, this gulag shit for your political views was not human progress, I'm going to say.
Yeah, with you. All right, let's go over to Ed's crew, who manages to hack the Phoenix and take back control. And the very first thing Ed does is send an antagonizing message to Dev, letting him know that he disapproves of the decision they made at Helios to not save the Russians.
Yeah, poor Nick, man. Like, did Ed really want to know anything about this? Like, he could have said, I said Alakazam, abracadabra, and because he's like in the explanation just gets cut off. Like, okay.
Yeah. I find it hilarious that you can boot a spaceship to safe mode, but because I'm used to doing that on my PC at home.
Well, but I think that's the implication, that a lot of this is probably off the shelf software. It's running like Windows 9, whatever Windows 95 is.
Probably.
Because why the fuck wouldn't it? You know, NASA might cobble something together out of ADA and COBOL and do all that kind of stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's a lot of third-party software in here.
But I also, I wish Ed had, because I have a hunch that whatever, because he said he cut something from the receiver line to the antenna. I wonder if that's going to cause problems, him doing this shortcut around the communication system at some kind of vital juncture later this season that might bite him in the ass.
Or update. Like the
yeah. Or do you bet against however many crew members are on board the Phoenix, or do you bet against the entire ground team of Helios trying to get around the thing that they did? You know, like I'm asking, is like, will Dev, when I was asking, like, will other shoes drop? Like, is this the end game? Like, Ed just got control forever, ever and ever. Will Dev try to take that back? Will
I expect Dev to try and take it back using other means?
Maybe the mutiny will be on the American side, the privatized American side.
Yeah, it certainly has started that way. Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. I could see that being a plot point in the future.
What did you think Dev was feeling when Ed told him? Like, he seemed, because he's, I've seen him be expressive. I've seen him throw monitors around and trash things. He seemed to be extremely Sphinx-like and inscrutable in this moment. What do you think he was thinking and feeling?
I mean, he's definitely upset. He's just not as upset about losing this because he hasn't lost it yet, right? He's still got a captain over there, a commander who is on mission, just on his own terms now. So
right.
I don't think it's like, you know, where he saw, oh shit, NASA is going to beat us to the punch here, that he gets very angry about.
Gotcha.
So okay. He seems like a big picture guy.
Yeah.
And he loses one of his other big picture people here with Karen attending her resignation, tendering rather her resignation over at Helios over Dev's protestations. He is. And that's the thing. He's not wrong in this scene. Like, all of this stuff was out of his control. And it's not his fault that the Russians fucked up and pushed things too far. And
yeah,
he's angry that it cost them their prestige. But, like, you're not wrong. You're just an asshole, right?
Yeah. No, it's like, and this is like, I've seen a lot of the Silicon Valley types think this way. It's like when they're disrupting, it's like that meme where it's like me sowing, haha, fuck yes, this is awesome, me reaping, oh God, this sucks. Like when they are the ones disrupting and fucking with people's plans and throwing their and flipping their tables over, it's like they're being kings of the universe and people should just deal. But when their shit gets disrupted, they get their bitch on. And that's what Dev is doing. Like, I didn't expect NASA to launch this innovative thing that's going to smoke my ass 2 years early just because they could in a safe and responsible way. Like, I mean, yeah, you didn't. The Russians may be a little bit of a wild card situation here, but like, them's the breaks, man. I don't know. He's just coming across deeply unlikable after what's clearly his camouflage in the first few. Oh, you know, this. Ultra democracy stuff is just bullshit, as Karen's going to explains this episode.
Yeah, and I think you had it right last episode. We've always been like 1 foot in, 1 foot out with this guy, right? Because we know he's saying things, he's doing things that are too good to be true, and if it's too good to be true, it's definitely not true.
He's a self-made billionaire. He has fucked people. Right. 100%. He has lied, cheated, and swindled to get in that position more than once. So, yeah. I was always skeptical, but there's always also the hope that, like, because every once in a while, a billionaire will amass a whole bunch of wealth and get a social consciousness, and then you get some good stuff out of him. But I was wondering, like, well, maybe Dev's going to be one of those guys, but,
Seems like no. All right, so Jenner takes the fuel from the Russian ship to continue their mission to Mars. The Russian cosmonaut who sent out the warning last episode, I think his name is Peloton, that's what I'm calling him, helps Kelly halfway out of her suit, with the other half to be removed later. Yeah, like I said, I did not expect both ships to be basically fine after that collision, but here we are. What do you think about the flirting going on here? In their, I assume this is some kind of suit with all these hoses meant to keep them cool.
Yeah,
undersuit. for their spacewalks.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you think space is cold, but the real bitch about space is a vacuum, which does not transmit heat of any kind very efficiently. Yeah. So it's very easy for a human body putting out that 98.6 to boil you alive in a spacesuit. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Kelly comes across as a little bit of a schoolgirl here, and I'm not sure why. Like you know what I mean? Like, it feels like this is like just the first guy who's given her attention, but she's like like in this plot, she's 28 years old.
Right.
She's been, maybe she spent the entire time at Antarctica with a bunch of dudes that she wasn't particularly attracted to. But like, I don't know. I felt like if she was 21, 22, this might play a little bit better, but she just like instantly smitten with this guy in a single episode goes from, which, like I said, I found that a little bit surprising, especially in the situation. You'd think she'd be even more guarded with the, you know, the international implications of what's going on here. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe she's reaching across a hand in diplomacy.
Sure, sure. More than a hand by the end of this episode. A couple of lips too.
Yeah. But young, attractive people falling in love, not a big problem. I just kind of surprised that it only took, but that's the other thing is like this episode, does it like, it might take like 6 to 8 weeks of time in real life, right?
Yeah, I'm not certain. Certainly it's many days at the very least, because there's a 3-day time jump.
It feels like a single episode, but they somewhere in the deep space, they had this problem, and then there's another bit of deep space you got to go through to get to Mars. So it could have been weeks that this relationship develops over. I don't know.
Yeah, I think last episode they were saying NASA was going to beat Helios to Mars by like 6 days. Yeah. So, you know, them being behind to start off with seems like a lot of travel time there still to go. So,
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Weeks, maybe months. All right. Danielle gets a video message from her son who just wants to cheer her up, and it seems to work. She hears she's been having a hard time up there. Which, how much of a hard time do you think he understands she's having? I mean, the funerals have been on TV. So
yeah, it's weird because he goes, I thought that was funny too, because he's like, yeah, hey mom, dad says you're having a hard time up there. It's like, what's CNN saying? CNN saying two of her astronauts under her command died, son.
There was a mid-space collision. Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a whole bunch. She got five surly Russians on board now that hate another one of her crew member. It's
status of the ship unknown. I mean, yeah. There's a lot going on up there. And he's just like, yeah, dad says having a hard time.
But I don't know. I think it's because my son's 15 going on 16, and every once in a while he'll aim my advice cannon back at me. And sometimes it's infuriating, but a lot of times it's pretty good advice. And thanks for that, son. I thought there's that kind of pride of like, oh my God, these lessons that I'm not just talking into a fucking vacuum.
Yeah.
And it also shares me the warmness of their family. I liked it.
It was cute. Then we go over to Aleta at Mission Control. They're comparing the specs of the Russian propulsion system with their own. They're suspiciously similar, and she takes that information to Margo, who dismisses it and tells her to focus on the mission at hand. Probably the right call. I like how Margo handles all of this, honestly. She's very cool in the face of potential discovery of her treason. But she's also like, still doing the right thing for NASA and the mission. It's walking a fine line here, and I think she walks it brilliantly.
It's both self-serving and also the best advice. Like, look, you gotta focus up because we're making a final burn for Mars. Now, clearly she's secretly hoping that Aleta will get so excited and preoccupied with the mission and all that, she's going to forget all about the... Yeah. I love Aleta. She's got calipers out, you know, taking measurements off of VHS tape and comparing it to blueprints. Like, in addition to all the other shit she's doing as flight director, you know, you got to love Aleta.
No, it's great. And even the second time around when Aleta's like, well, I kept picking at this and there's even more information that says, I know the exact year that the plans were given to them. Even then, I think Margo does a great job of handling it. It's not denial. Mm-hmm. It's not like getting forceful and, you know, commanding her to stand down on this thing. It's more like, okay, we still have the mission at hand. Let's get these people down on the planet, and then I'll take this to the DOJ. Whether she does that or not is a...
That's the question. I need to see another episode or two, because I could also see her with Elaida like a month from now being like, well, I referred it to the DOJ and I haven't heard anything since.
Right.
Which, and she actually didn't. Because at what point does Elaida like go over her head and be like, I can't... I don't know. I'm... But also, I don't see how Margot goes to the DOJ and does the things that she says to Sergei that she wants to do without it blowing up in her face. Like, how, what version of the truth could she tell where it's like, well, you know, Sergei's helped me over the years and Russia didn't like it and they imprisoned him and they're threatening his family. He just did that out of the kindness of his heart. Well, what the hell did you share? Like, I don't know. She's handling everything right now, but it feels like there's just because the wheels are spinning and she's trying to look for the angle to where she can get what she wants. And the true test of her character will be what happens when that highway runs out. You know, does she drive the car off the cliff or does she turn around and be like, all right, enough is enough.
For sure. We'll see. All right. Sojourner burns for Mars and one of their engines is a little bit off and Danielle wants to get it fixed, but she needs the help of the Russians on board, this Peloton guy.
Palatov?
Yeah, Peloton. I'm going to keep calling
him Peloton. Is Anatoly. I think it's Anatoly Palatov.
Jesus. That's a mouthful for an American, let me say.
And he's probably got six other names. If I know anything from Tom Clancy, like Russians have seven different names depending on who's talking to them, if they're related to them, if they're older or younger, if they like them and hate them. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. But that's just setting up, I think, tension for, I don't know. There's a lot of tension all around, right? It's setting up Kelly to get into a relationship with the guy who might not be good for her. And Margot could get in trouble for all of this. And it leads into Elaida discovering more. It's pretty nicely crafted.
I agree. Can we talk about the Russians' space uniforms
and
how they're just three Adidas stripes short of being Russian modern Russian gangsters? They're wearing track suits and like Velcro sneakers, man. It's hilarious when they're all standing in a group. I like it. I love it.
Nice.
They need chains. That's all they need. They need chains.
I mean, they're already listening to the right music, apparently.
True.
All right. Karen sends a video message to Ed, which Danny sees and is very curious about. So he goes to the Helios hacker to figure out the admin password and then uses it to view Karen's message to Ed. Jesus Christ, man. Danny is an idiot. He's so transparent. I fully expect in the next episode. Oh, yeah. He's doing things that he probably knows in his... in his above the belt brain are really stupid and are going to get him caught. But I fully expect the hacker dude to next episode be rifling through like, okay, what was Danny looking at with this password? Cause he knows what's up.
That's the thing. I wondered if you thought Nick knew. I thought,
yeah,
Danny did not play it cool. Like Danny didn't play it cool. If Danny spent another 60 seconds talking to this guy and it's like, and like to make it, but it seems like,
he got the information. Literally, he wanted,
he wanted was the rainbow password. Like,
yeah,
and it's got to blow up in his face. It's got to.
Yeah, Nick doesn't know why he wants it. He just knows that he's going to use it for something.
Yeah,
rainbow. Yeah, it's a bad password.
It's a bad password. You'd be shocked at how much industrial equipment though it comes with, like fucking admin as their username and password. If you can flash it back to that state, you can get there.
Yeah, they rely on securing physical access to not being able to, you know, get
access. I just wonder if he'll get busted even without Nick, because it just seems like this guy's compulsive. Like he's just going to be in Ed's mailbox 24/7. And eventually, I don't know, because it seems like there's other.
He's going to say something about their relationship that he couldn't have known unless he watched those videos. And then Ed's going to be like, wait, what the fuck? You watching my videos? Why? And then it's all going to
come out. This is true. Probably in an angry confrontation about him not trusting him enough with the stick.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean, that's the thing. It's like
going to be big.
there's so many different ways their relationship could blow up that, like, it probably doesn't, it probably is not going to need Nick and the password to blow him up, but
right.
Yeah, he's just torturing himself, you know, looking at all this stuff and nurturing this hatred and this jealousy. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's a dumbass. I mean, he's a real dumbass. The conversation he has, or the video message he sends to his brother later in this episode, is just idiotic.
The thing is this episode felt like centered Karen in the villainy for me, where, you know, I was like, just because Danny looks like a serial killer and he's played like a serial killer, I was thinking, like, this is the problem with Danny. And yeah, Danny is doing, like, none of this behavior is healthy. But on the other hand, you know, Danny's had a little bit of a rough life. Karen was the older person with all the power in her hand. She was his boss. She was a surrogate mother. She has this inappropriate relationship with him, and then saddles him with this secret that he's got to keep. Mm-hmm. And like, it's probably his first serious relationship, or like, well, probably, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just think that, like, the way Karen talks about this, like, oh, it's my sword past. She jokes about their friends, like, turn me off. And the way Danny talked about his experiences and how he's processed this and how he's got all these conflicted feelings about Ed and his dad and all this because of that, like, I kind of felt sorry for the, you know, Patrick Bateman here.
I felt sorry for him at times, but his reasoning doesn't track. Like, when he's talking to his brother and he says, like, I thought I could come up here and just put all this behind me, I'm like, that's stupid. You're an idiot, because putting yourself in a sardine can with the man whose wife you had an affair with is the opposite of putting all this behind you. It's getting right into the fucking middle of it, you idiot. And he's got to know that.
Right. So just so you don't think I'm a hateful misogynist, let me also center Ed into the villainy, because the most person at fault for this situation is Ed, for shielding Danny from the consequences of his actions and overriding his commanding officer's decision about revoking his flightworthy status. If Ed had just been like, you know, damn, he's back to drinking, he's acting crazy, and he needs to save his relationship, his family, none of this would have ever happened. So, like, everything that has, I imagine there's going to be bad things that happen to Ed because of this, and he's going to deserve every bit of it because, you know, he's got that Ed thing that he just, you know, if it's not important to him, it's not important.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Kelly and Pelatov work with Aleda. Peloton. To troubleshoot the engine on the Sojourner, he encourages Kelly to give communism a chance. Just give it a chance. Like John Lennon said, right? Give communism a chance.
Let me lecture you, the Vietnam refugee, on the glorious benefits of socialism. Yeah. Uh-huh. Maybe you should come and check out our grocery stores, Anatoly.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
He's apparently an NWA fan. He's quoting Express Yourself lyrics here.
You can see it's like, so if he, like, I guess with the American culture that we export, I can see that a lot of the Eastern Bloc countries would see us as fully insane. You know, like, look at the complete, like what the impression he's got of America because of, like, NWA, which is not based on nothing. It's not all of America, but it's a, you know, it's a shamefully large part of, you know, and
it's the same way I feel about Japan. Japan exports a lot of weird culture.
Yeah.
And I have a certain view of the Japanese people based on that, but I'm sure it doesn't apply to everyone. It's probably a microcosm of their overall culture.
Right.
But yeah, it's hard when that's all you see to not think that that's everybody there.
Yeah. You always see, like, when you think about your own people, you always see the strengths and the benefits, and when you think about another person, other people's, you only see their weaknesses and flaws.
Sure.
But I don't know. It's like, but this still didn't really harsh their ardor, their ardor very much.
No, it does temporarily until he calls her beautiful, and then it's all back on again. Yeah,
Kelly,
you're right. Schoolgirl stuff here.
It is cool schoolgirl stuff, but I like because I thought it's like, oh, they're pumping the brakes on it. And he's like, well, are you getting this from your father? Which is such a shitty, insulting thing to say. She's like, actually, no, history books. But then again, a couple weeks go by, calls her pretty, and
where are you getting your information, Peloton?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. Our media is as Western and imperialist as they come, but I hate to tell you about your guys's. Everybody's fixated on a splinter in their brother's eye, right?
Yep. Let's talk about some other Russians. Sergei is brought to Margo's office. He is looking pretty worse for wear. He's bald. I really like the yellow eyeshadow they put under his eyes to make him just look sick. He just looks bad. They have a private 5-minute conversation during which he reveals that he was tortured for refusing to continue the blackmail operation, and he apologizes for lying to Margo. She forgives him and tells him that she's going to get him asylum, and he says, no, don't do that, because the KGB will definitely go after my family, which is why he was doing all this in the first place.
How do you torture someone? Are they targeting his lungs by like just giving him making him sleep in 10 below in wet clothes? Like I was trying to, or are they actually literally poisoning him as a way to, cause he's very sick.
Very sick.
It's not like go ahead.
I assume they're making him just like vape a whole bunch of Juul pods. Just like Juul pods 24/7. His air is Juul pods.
You like America so much? Here's a case of Camels. I need you to smoke it in the next 15 minutes, comrade. Here, would help. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was... because they said it's very careful not to break his nose or teeth. They worked on my lungs. And like, if they said kidneys, I would like, okay, well, they're just body shots. But lungs, and he's hacking up a lung. Yeah. I'm not sure what involves... what kind of torture they do. And I wasn't able to... What do you search for that? Lung torture? So late 20th century Soviet lung torture techniques.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It didn't return any results.
I would have expected at least one hit.
It's probably just the poor health, the poor living conditions, the poor food.
Yeah.
And the also non-facial beatings that he's getting that's made him so sick.
Yeah. I don't think KGB prisons are too concerned with your comfort.
No, so. I would think the opposite.
Concerned with your discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Phoenix enters Mars orbit with NASA days behind. Unfortunately, they have to wait for a dust storm to disperse before they can risk landing. Pretty good ticking clock here with NASA approaching hot on their heels.
It's a great way to add some last minute drama. Cause like, oh, they get there 3 days early. No problem. Well, there are these planet wide dust storms that would be a real bitch to land in. I thought it was really cool, and the way this all pays off, I thought was beautiful as well.
And I like how they portray the successive like failures of their systems that would be the problems for landing in a situation like this, right? Because you think, oh, you know, you got GPS, which could tell you exactly where they are and how far they are from their landing position. You've got radar, which would be able to tell you how far they are from the ground, the surface. All those things get thwarted because the GPS doesn't work.
The first part of that's global. It's not Martian.
They specifically mention like, hey, you got no GPS here.
Right.
Which I don't even know why they mention that, because all the astronauts would be fucking aware there's no GPS.
It's they're talking to us when they're saying stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of silly. But like the radar stuff made a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the dust is going to block it up. And
I mean, our planes here on Earth do that stuff. And if you get a severe enough blackout or a whiteout condition or whatever, you can't land a plane even. That stuff is very good when they finally get to it. Danny sends a message back to his brother about how hard the mission has been because he is thinking about their dad and because he didn't realize apparently it'd be so hard to be stuck in a giant tin can with the man whose wife he slept with. Idiot. This guy kills me.
That's the other thing is like this. I feel like this show with both Kelly and Danny kind of want us to forget that they're almost 30 and think that they're like in the early 20s because I don't know, because like my sympathy for Danny goes so far. He's a man at this point. He needs to make better decisions, like you said. But on the other hand, he's also put an enormous amount of pressure on himself that not only does he be an astronaut to live up to the ideals of his parents, but also his dead to live his dead friend's dream. And
yeah,
you know, back at home, he was facing severe consequences and was going to have to come clean to his wife. And that's the other thing is like, he's also like a national hero. He saved Polaris. There's all this like enormous pressure on this kid's shoulders. And I do feel for him. And I understand why he thought like, well, if I run off with Ed, then that puts off. But yeah, yeah, he's just doing all the wrong things.
Yeah, it's weird. I know this is like highly dramatic to have them on the same ship, but I feel like if he had gone on any other mission besides the one that Ed was on, I would be a lot more sympathetic to his cries of like, I thought I could put this all behind me by doing this thing.
Right, because it's not the choice of like being. Well, I guess it was because he wouldn't have been able to take any missions at NASA. Right.
Yeah, yeah, it was either go with it or not go at all.
And then it's like that's kind of addict thinking, you know? It's like, oh God, face the consequences. But what if I put them off by some gambit, you know, one more day? And he's addicted to the juicy fat, the fat juicy MILF that is Karen. You know, he can't quit her.
I mean, it's hard to blame him. She looks very good, especially
that's what I'm saying
with her like Storm-esque, like highlighted hair, gray highlighted hair. She's looking really good this season.
Yeah,
it's just like
he's come by.
You know, this is bad, man.
He's come by it honestly, and this is why like I put a lot of blame for Karen in this situation because when this started happening, she had all the power. And should have known better, but
and he was a kid. It was the dumb mistake he made, but he's doubling down now. All right, Peloton's having a hard time with the instructions from Aleda, and he complains to Kelly. He calls her beautiful just in time for them to find the good news out that Helios can't land yet because of Dust Storm, and then Kelly just makes out with him, just boom, right. I don't know. Is this?
She climbs. My note says this... Kelly climbs into his mouth. Yeah, that was. Yeah. I think so. I think it's. It kind of reminds me of that. You know that sailor kissing the nurse, like when they had VJ Day in World War II. Like, have you seen that picture? It's this famous black and white photo of like this like spontaneous joy at achieving something that's beyond your own personal spirits, like. As global humankind implications. I can't even, well, I mean, what does that feel like to be a part of that?
No idea.
You know?
Never been a part of it.
That's what they don't tell you about Buzz and Neil. Passionate makeout session as soon as that eagle landed. It didn't take him 30 minutes to get into her spacesuit. It was 25 of that just like getting rid of all this sexual energy that they were charged with.
Better be careful. One of them's going to come down here and punch you. I've seen them do it before.
I'm not denying went to the moon, Buzz. I'm just saying.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you and Neil had. I mean, it's clearly. What are you going to do? It's hard to resist. But yeah, I don't know. They're going for this opposites attract thing, and they really did at the last minute. I just hope they don't get leverage over Kelly in any kind of way. I don't want to see Kelly. I don't want to see Kelly go down the Margot road.
Yeah, I'm hoping Kelly is smarter than that.
Although maybe the Russians, the Russians should worry about Anatoly.
Oh yeah,
you know when he gets smitten with her, he's already smitten with American culture. Like,
is he gonna defect too? Are they gonna have two defectors?
What if every one of these cosmonauts? What if every one of these cosmonauts defect? They live on they live in American values and American music, American food. Albeit Martian, for however many months they're going to be there, then they come back and they're already going to be in America. And they're just like, we like to defect.
Sure, sure.
That would be a hell of a thing.
Yeah, be great. I'd love to see it. All right, we go back to Earth, where Wayne shows Karen how to make goo balls. Then they chat about what she's going to do after Helios. Come on, Karen. I'm not buying it. Nobody is buying it. No one in the history of weed has ever enjoyed edibles for their flavor. No one ever. It was something you tolerate in order to get high. That's it.
I mean, was this just a ball of butter? I'm trying to think of like what this actually was, because he fries a bunch of butter.
It might be peanut butter. So I've heard of goo balls, but I don't know what they are, what they're actually made of.
I've never heard of it. I thought this was a show only creation.
Wayne's not inventing the wheel.
Wayne said, "Welcome to the goo" at the end. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah, that was good.
But that's the other thing. I guess that like when I said I've kind of switched sympathies, I keep switching back and forth between because this is just a fucking mess. But the Danny is because like Karen is just while her husband's dealing with the situation, while Danny's dealing with the situation, she's just kind of like joking about it. Like neither one of them said, "God," and Ed's up there, like, that's a fucking crazy situation. It's just a joke. Like, oh, you're the graduate. Oh, you're the seductive older lady. Ugh, blah, blah, gross, vomit. Shame on both of you.
To the point where like Molly better watch out, because the last time she had this crisis of focus, she slept with Danny. So Wayne's the only person in range here. I don't think it's gonna happen. I'm just, you know, making a joke, but Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Wayne would do that to Molly. I don't think Wayne's that kind of guy. I'm always happy to be disappointed by people, but yeah.
Yeah, it would be a total betrayal of character, honestly, for them to end up sleeping together. But I do like the conversation that goes on here between mm-hmm. Karen and Wayne as he's kind of guiding her through her own thoughts and feelings about leaving Helios.
Yeah.
You know, she loves taking risks. He's telling her, like, okay, find the core of you. What are the things that you actually enjoy doing? Look, you're a multimillionaire, 100 millionaire. I don't know how much money you make in 1994, 1992, whatever, by selling a space corporation. But sure. It's a hell of a lot of money.
And you're the sole survivor, so it's probably, well, I guess it goes, yeah. But if you got half of that or whatever, you know.
Right. Hundreds of millions, I assume.
Yeah.
So she has tons of money. She loves taking risks. She loves negotiating, building things from the ground up. I really feel like the direction they're taking her is like Donna from Halt Catch Fire, where she's just going to be a VC. Because like, that's what you do when you have a shitload of money you don't know what to do with, and a drive to build things from the ground up and take risks, right?
You know, what if she does a Helios done right? What if she's just like, I'm going to take this money and start an aerospace, and I'm going to get Molly to run. Like, yeah, I could start seeing some of these pieces come together. And maybe she does like a truly democratic for the people space kind of thing.
Sure. That'd be fun to see.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. Were you surprised that Wayne knew? Do you think Molly? I don't think Molly knows. I think Wayne knows, but I don't think Molly knows about Karen and Ed and Danny.
I agree.
Okay, because I don't think Molly would not tell Ed.
And I think they're, you know, Wayne and her are just way closer than Wayne or than Molly and her.
Yeah.
We try to make it super easy to support Making Podcasts a Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Let's move on to the next scene where Danny is watching another message from a very high Karen meant for Ed about how proud she is of him. And he watches part of Ed's response until Ed knocks on his cabin door and invites him to play some cards and chat. And they chat about Gordo and Shane. And then Danny starts playing with fire here. He steers the conversation to Karen, asking Ed what would happen if he ever found the guy that Karen slept with. And Ed basically says he'd kill him.
Yeah, he kind of wants to get caught, right? There's like, I felt like there's two sides to Danny. He wants to get caught. He wants to come clean. He wants to put all this behind him. And then, like, at the end of the conversation, he saw a way. He's like, wow, Ed's a hell of a lot more zen about this whole thing than I would ever have thought. Well, here, I'm gonna ask the old man the question of the day. Well, you think you'd ever forgive Danny? I would fucking kill that guy. I would paste them. I would strain their grease through my car. He turns in his like serious, like, and then Danny's like, okay, never mind. I fucking hate this plot line, but this is a beautiful scene in this terrible storylines sequence, because it worked really well.
Yeah, I wish Danny didn't have that smug fucking smile on his face every second of the scene, like that. You know, the half smile he's got that makes him look like the Patrick Bateman serial killer type.
But it's the whole Oedipus. You want your dad's approval. You want to kill your dad. You want to fuck your mom. You want, and you've done sure. Half of those things. And there's just one, like, when last scene of him just watching Karen and like he's just in full psychotic mode, just his face is just impassive, dead man's mask. It's I do worry that this fucking show, which is excellent, has got the problem that 20% of its scenes this season are designed to just make people feel uncomfortable and weird about half of the main characters.
Yeah, I don't know, the other stuff they're doing has me just totally distracted to where I don't notice if any of that stuff is bothering me.
That's the thing. It's like, it's not as bad as it was last season, because I think it's because Danny's now a man. But
all right, 3 days later, Sojourner makes it to Mars orbit. The dust storm still hasn't cleared, so Helios hasn't landed yet. Margo tells Sergei how nervous she is and explains the meaning of 7 minutes of terror. And then Aleta comes to her with more supporting information for her theory that the Russians stole their engine design. This time, Margo agrees to take it to the DOJ once they land on Mars.
So 7 minutes of terror is like with Apollo 13, you know, when the astronauts are going through the atmosphere, they lose all contact with them. That's what they're referring to, right?
It could certainly be some kind of communications blackout, but I thought it was just simply the time that it takes Yeah, from going from orbit to the surface.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
That's what I assumed.
I did not know that the NASA had such a poor success rate landing on Mars, but like, I guess that makes a lot of sense. You know, that's tricky, landing on another planet back in the 60s.
Yeah.
I did wonder, it's like, well, I wonder if it's like, did they not know how much atmosphere they had to work with? Did they not, like, it made me want to know more about the Mariner expeditions and the different Mars probes.
Oh, I thought they were talking about the moon landings that they were trying to do. But I guess you're right. They didn't.
I thought they were talking about
landing.
I thought they're talking about the Martian, just the probes landing them on, safely landing, getting the report, results, all that kind of stuff.
Makes sense. So the way that Aleta comes to, I guess, understand that this engine design was stolen is that the Peloton up there is quoting memorized numbers that he has to memorize because he needs them at a moment's notice.
Yeah, there's this checklist and emergency procedures. Yeah,
right. He's using an old set of numbers, so you know he's not like looking at their manuals in order to quote these numbers back, because he's quoting them incorrect numbers, apparently, which since have changed. So it's interesting that not only can she say, hey, they must have stolen our design, but she knows what year it happened. I feel like that could be important.
The other thing she said is like someone at NASA must have given it to him. That felt like a leap, because like the Russians have a well-run and respected spy network. Mm-hmm. Someone at NASA, if they're a Russian spy or whatever, but like it doesn't necessarily imply, or it could be, like, people beyond Russia have the blueprints. I mean, beyond NASA have these blueprints, right? I imagine lots of people in the federal government that have, you know, security clearance could get this access. And contractors, yeah, I was thinking that, like, it felt like a reach to go, like, maybe. But also, I think that's a natural jump that Aleta would make. Like, oh, my God, what if it's one of us?
Sure. Yeah, they might just be shortcutting that for the sake of the show.
Right.
You know, they don't need to go investigate Lockheed Martin or something and dead end that, because we already know
that's going to be the next several episodes. Like, well, so we're still going through Lockheed Martin, and there's still that Boeing contact or rundown. She just keeps on feeding her that bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think
that one plant in Michigan that makes the screws. Right. You know, got to check with them.
Then we get the news setting up the stakes for the dust storm and the race to be the first on Mars. And Ed sees that the dust storm is thinning. And he asks Danny, what should we do? Should we go for it? And he says, yeah, let's go for it, man. So they do.
I like how the journalists pronounce, like, the way they're talking about the dust storm, and, you know, it's every 2 hours the astronauts reach their decision point, or go, no go.
Right. It's such a foreign thing. You've been talking about space for the last 20 years.
That's true.
Like in the popular culture, right? It's not like America was in the 90s where nobody had thought about space. Well, I guess they still were.
Because I'm thinking Apollo 13 probably popularized go, no go in the public's consciousness.
And we're way past that in the show. So
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. You'd think that they would be a little bit more hip to it.
Or maybe, you know, if Apollo 13 didn't happen the way it happened here, they never brought the no go into
Ron Howard never made a movie about the disaster. And although you think they'd make the movie about Apollo, Ron Howard would make it about Apollo 11.
Yeah, sure. The one that did land.
The one that did land disastrously and almost didn't make it out.
Yeah. Why the obsession with who lands first? Look, I know it's a big historic thing, but it's just a moment in a massive series of moments for the space program. I don't like it. It feels wrong to me to obsess over who makes it there first, right? As if this is some kind of competition and the first person there wins everything, takes the cup.
They kind of do. Like, everyone knows, like, probably 50% of the world population knows the first man who stepped on the moon. many less people would know the second person, much less the third. I couldn't tell you the third person who stepped on the moon.
Well, this is why I have a problem with it, because there's nothing particularly significant about that moment over the moment of like developing the drive that got them there, or the moment of setting up a habitat, you know, 7 months later from the equipment that they sent on the mission that actually landed there with their equipment set 2 years earlier. Like,
yeah,
it just feels petty to me, is what it feels like.
It does, but it's like, because I agree, the larger point that like everyone that contributed to the effort to get us to get us to Mars should be credited. But on the other hand, there is going to be a singular person that sets foot on there first, and they are going to be remembered. That's just the way the things work. And well, if you are the type of
that's our system.
That's true. We could completely reorganize our culture and history to not value sure. those things.
It's a big ask.
And maybe Captain Picard would get around to solving that problem for us. But
I mean, Captain Picard's a nobody, right? I mean, he was the 7 billionth person to set foot on Mars. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. What did Picard actually do? He's the first one to get assimilated by the Borg. No one could take that away from him.
True.
That's probably not even true.
True.
7 of 9 had a beat on that. What did Picard do, actually? What a fucking fraud.
Right?
What a fucking fraud.
You've
exposed him. He's got nothing going on. That's why Picard sucks. That we finally figured it out. They used always stood behind the beard, and we thought he was cool.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell were we talking about? Yes, first on Mars. I really admire your egalitarian thinking, but I also understand why vainglorious astronauts want to be the first boot on Mars too.
Right. I'm just like, trying immortal. To get us to a better place.
You're immortal. You're the closest thing to immortality that we got is to have something like that on your resume.
True. Legacy. All right, Sojourner is configured for landing, but Danielle thinks the storm still makes it too risky, so she decides to wait on landing until the next orbit, which is unfortunate because Ed's lander's launching, man. Ed's going. Did you want to talk anything about Danielle making this half decision here that she's going to immediately go back on, or?
No, because I think that Danielle is like, you know what? Our mission parameters say that we need this amount of visibility, and it's not about her being afraid or cautious. She just believes in the fact that the smart people have said that this equipment is rated for this, and these are the safety margins. And as soon as those things clear up and she's got 5 seconds to make that decision, she's strapped in. I actually thought that was really badass and like a uniquely Danielle badass, the way she said it, like the way her determined face sets and she slaps her face shield down. It's like, all right, button up, people, we're going straight in. Like, it was kind of really fucking made her look cool, her tackle on the Russian. Yeah. Did and it's I imagine we'll get people to say like, well, this proves that NASA or Margo was right all along, and Danielle was the best person for the job.
Maybe
I don't know how you do a Bayesian analysis on a set of something that happens once, you know. Sure. That's one of those things. It's like, yeah, maybe it worked out this right. It could have like, it easily could have gone the way that the Maverick Ed lands in the middle of this marginal dust storm and Danielle takes another trip around and is a second. And then would that mean that Ed would have been the right decision? It's debatable. That's all I've ever said is debatable. And there was a process set to make that decision. And that decision was clearly Molly's to make, and Margo changed the rules after the fact to get her way. And I don't support that kind of behavior in any kind of government position.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
no, I really do love Danielle making the decision and the confidence to make that decision within 8 seconds, you know, like,
yeah,
oh shit, the condition on the ground has changed, you need to make a decision right now, and it's a big decision, right? It's not like,
and the strength of leadership it took to protect her crew, because like, you could tell everyone on that ship wanted to land.
Oh yeah,
especially the Russians. And to stand up to all that pressure and do what she thought was right and for her crew and for the country, like, I came away, I've always been pretty high on Danielle's stock, but I mean, I think she just took the Ed position on the show. She is the alpha astronaut now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like Ed. I like the decisions he's making in most circumstances, but yeah, also, Danielle makes some
can
good
we talk
ones too.
About the other thing, the other elephant in this room? The Helios spacesuits are the dumbest fucking things I've ever seen. What are these plush Mega Man outfits that they're wearing? What is this Hero Number 6 Michelin Man outfit that they're wearing? This is...
I didn't even notice. What?
You didn't notice these bloated fucking astronaut suits? They're no. designed by committee? Oh my God. How do you out... How do you... Oh God. Oh, they're the worst. They're the
man,
worst.
I gotta go check that out now.
They look like after what's her face ate the blueberry pill in Willy Wonka, except you left them out in the sun, like in your like they're the toy version, and you were a kid and you left them out in your sandbox for 3 or 4 years. You come back years later and they're all bleached. That's the spacesuit these guys are wearing. Terrible fashion. Single-handedly made spaceflight look not cool.
See, that's the reason Picard didn't get to Mars first. He was too worried about the fashion. He's always tugging at his fucking uniform, too busy to send down the landers. And he got beat by Danielle.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know about that.
Fashion. It's form over function here at NASA, here at Helios, rather.
I think Ed would have landed if he thought that he could have got his fat little suit fingers around the stick and had the dexterity that he needed. But he was trapped in this beach ball, and sure. he didn't think Danny could wrestle any better than he could. So he had to bail. Are we talking about the entire landing sequence?
We can, and I can go through that if you want.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Ed's lander launches the Russian commander along with, Danielle's pilot and improved visibility all convince Danielle to make the landing attempt as well, and it's a race to the surface. No GPS, they lose their radar on the way down, visibility is basically nothing. So Ed eventually aborts the mission at the last second, disappointing himself, Danny, Dev, as I'm gonna assume his full first name is Devastated at this point. Devastated Iessa. Sojourner manages to land without incident, and then everyone in Houston celebrates. And Margo says to Sergey, I'm going to get you and your family to America no matter what.
This was top quality space porn. I love this entire sequence. From Ed's perspective, like, I think he's there's a point in the landing where I think he was shaken. And that's where Popeye just narrowly misses cratering into a mountain range. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
And it came out of nowhere. And I think and he's like, looks over at this kid and he's like, Jesus Christ, we have no business trying to do this.
Yeah.
And what's wild, and this is what makes it goes back to debate about who's better, Ed or Danielle. When you look at the plane that the Sojourner sets down on, they were so lucky. They are like on a field of these jagged boulders and these like little mini mountains that are coming out of there. They come down on that and they landed hard too, which they barely got this stuff down. They could have easily, Danielle could have easily gotten them killed on a marginal landing, and they just got lucky. And Ed, he could have, like, that mountain range could have been the last one that he didn't see, and he could have landed fine. But I think that's what shook him. He saw that and is like, Jesus, we could have been dead, and it's just dumb luck.
Yeah, I mean, he like grits his teeth and continues on in that moment, but also then the storm picks up, right? He loses visibility of any kind once they get into the dust storm, and yeah, he pulls the plug. You're right, though. That shakes him in that moment. I was surprised, I guess, to see, and I'm trying to like think through the mechanics of this. I was surprised to see the approach that the Sojourner takes, because a Sojourner is a landing craft itself, right? They're direct landing on Mars. They don't have a lander like the Phoenix does, because how are you gonna land a hotel? But the way they come in is like designed to generate the most heat, but I think it's also designed to bleed off the most speed.
Right.
Is that the way that I should be interpreting this?
Yeah, I think it's just like the space shuttle. It essentially falls like a very aerodynamic thing and bleeds all of that speed off into the air. The Martian's atmosphere is extremely thin.
Right, right. It's not.
But if you're moving, it's still going to generate that heat.
Oh yeah, But the idea is just like hit as much atmosphere as you can,
yes,
so that your propulsion systems have to work that much less.
Yeah, right? Come in at a very narrow, shallow angle, and what do you think about Danny's feelings towards Ed? Because the other thing I notice is right as Ed hits the abort button, you can see the ground and it momentarily clears up, and they were so close. They're like probably 500 feet. But maybe too close for how fast they're going. Yeah,
exactly. Like it makes me question, like, would they have pulled that landing off or not?
And they mentioned one of the compromises of that teeny little shuttle thing was that Ed was not going to have the fuel to loiter. Like, he didn't have like 30 seconds to hover. He didn't have like Neil Armstrong where, you know, he had like 100 seconds of fuel that he could take manual control. Like, he had to make a decision right then and there. And I felt that they were telling us that with that shot, that if Ed had gone just a little bit further, they probably would have been fine.
Okay.
So he'd gone through all the dangerous parts, almost smacked into the mountain and was landing. And it was a nice clear spot, too, it looked like.
Uh-huh,
and I think that Danny is going to be just furious that didn't trust him. And my question is that alone going to be the thing that puts a rift, or is Danny going to say something stupid? Like, I fucked Karen.
Yeah. I mean, they've set up his anger problems in previous episodes, right? I assume, this is the thing that's going to push him over the edge, and he's just going to come out with it or say something that's so antagonizing that Ed realizes it.
Does he throw him in a brig, confine him to quarters? Like, what do you do?
Paste him? Airlock him?
You promised us I'm going to be a greasy spot.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see, man. It's not going to be good, whatever it is. I hope he doesn't just kill him, but we'll see. I feel bad for Ed. I feel super bad for Ed. You know, this is Ed is always the bridesmaid, never the bride when it comes to landing on new planetary bodies.
Yeah.
He's flashing back in this scene, right, to Gordo and him trying to land on the moon.
Yep.
And aborting that mission. He aborts this mission. And I'm looking at it like, okay, why exactly does he abort this mission? And I feel like it's tied in with Gordo because he will not let himself be the guy that gets Gordo's kid killed, right?
I think that's when he looks dead, over at the last minute, he sees Danny's face, is like, I fucking can't,
I can't do this. It cost me so much personally because I think we could still make this, but
maybe that's the thing,
this is the second
furious
time this has happened to me and I'm pissed off, but like, I can't be that guy.
Yeah, Ed's got a bit of an anger issue too. Like, he's had a lot more time to work on it and think about it. But, you know, like, like when they get there and they can't land for 3 days, like, that, God damn it. Like, you know, just the sheer frustration. It might be like, you know, if I had any other pilot, I would have landed that thing, but I couldn't kill Gore. Like it's not fair, but resentment, you know, not anger, but like unjustified resentment. I can see it being a really explosive combination. My only question is a boil over immediately, or are we going to have a little bit of a slow burn on that?
We've got another half of this season. I assume it'll be a slower burn than we might hope. Because I want to see the fireworks next episode, honestly. I just want to see them pull their helmets off when they get back to the Phoenix and just go at each other. But
I'm kind of amazed that they landed in the fifth episode. There's going to be half of the season on Mars, settling it, exploring it.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see them unpack the supply mission that had landed, you know, years in advance.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. I wonder if it's, well, they would have known. Like, if things had gone wrong, they'd know before they got there. I want to see how the Russians cooperate. I want to see... I really want to see Helios's mobile habs kind of roving over and the landscape and how far away they settle. Because that's the thing. It's like Dev 1 has set this free trade zone, artist colony, entrepreneurial incubator on Mars. What does that look like in practice? And what is the follow-up act? Like, does he immediately start selling like real estate? Like, there's a lot of angles to this. So I guess they need a lot of time to deal with it.
Yeah, for sure. They're kind of slow playing the defector stuff too, with Roland. He got a lot of ominous looks at the end of last episode, but this episode they really didn't do anything with it.
Yep.
We'll see where that goes. There are a lot of balls in the air, plot wise. And then we get second to last scene here is Karen watching you know, the news about Ed having to abort the mission and feeling really bad for Ed, but then feeling really good for Kelly, who was on the landing mission. And then Ellen addresses the nation about this momentous occasion. And we get a final shot here of the Russian commander trying to steal the prestige of being the first person to set foot on Mars.
That's a man that understands the value of being first boot.
Right. He's not going to be a Picard for sure. But he and Danielle, you know, squabble over it. And it is very funny, like you said, how the news portrays this as like, oh, this is this triumphant moment for cooperation.
Arm in arm. They win. Yep. They take the first step together.
And I assume they think they just tripped and fell.
I
think they're like fighting. I think they're...
No. Danielle's fucking pissed. Like her, she's like, you get your commie ass back in that airlock. Like, get her. Get him, Danielle.
Wait, I did not
get him.
Save your ass just to have you steal the glory, right?
Where do you stay? Like, the balls on this Russian. Where do you, yeah, like, I mean, but
fuck
also,
this guy. I would have grabbed the biggest wrench on the ship and gone at him in that
gone
airlock.
After him.
He's not, but that's, yeah, what, he's that's not getting like, out on that surface.
But he's a patriot, like, right? Like, that's what you, I mean, because I'm like, what does a history book
his
say?
Country, certainly, yeah, yeah.
That you busted up your ship, your hated rival comes to pick your sorry ass up, and then you jump ahead to be the first person. I don't know. I'd like what the history books make of that, because like that's like got to have the biggest asterisk of all time. First boot on Mars is,
but that's
comrade.
A footnote, man. That's a footnote. The actual name is what apparently matters in our society. So yeah, if he gets out there first, if he like trips Danielle coming down that ramp and manages to get first boots on Mars, he's the guy. He's the man. He's done it for Russia.
The way the season's gone, I'm kind of surprised neither one of them hit their face plate on a rock or a landing cable broke free, just to further the drama. But like, yeah, I hope we get immediately back. I want to see like how they resolve this wrestling match.
Because
this guy, the ball's on him.
Let me ask you this for future reference. Is regolith a term that only applies to the moon, or is it any body that is not Earth?
That's a good question. I thought it was something. What is the regolith? Yeah, no, unconsolidated residual or transported material that overlies the solid rock on the Earth, Moon, or planet. So dirt
on
is regolith
Earth too.
Yeah.
Wow,
that's okay. I thought it might be moon exclusive, but it's, I guess it's regolith.
Yeah. All right, good to know. So I can use that interchangeably with ground or surface.
Yeah.
Holy shit! I have so many words to refer to. Where
they're
standing.
Referring to gardening as like, you know, I'm going to go dig around in my regolith and see it's because it makes you feel like Mark Watney. Makes you feel like you're growing potatoes on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of course I'll mix it in shit buckets, you know, like get the full.
I was going to say, yeah, dropping off some regolith.
Dropping off some kids in the regolith.
some regolith in the pool, I think. Proper term. Anyway,
welcome
that's
to
the
goo,
the
everyone. Welcome to the goo.
do you have anything more to say about this episode?
I think I've said enough.
Okay.
I'm interested in what everyone else has to say. As always, you can reach us at FAM@baldmove.com. Of course, that stands for All Mankind. We're going to try to squeeze in a feedback episode next week because I know it's been a couple. But if not that, then the week after for sure. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you've had as good a time listening as we did recording and watching. We will be back next week when For All Mankind drops the 6th episode. Hope to see you there. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.